started writing messages at one point when I was, we were watching the television rather a lot, and these came out of that. The first one's called Mr. Most People's Message to Me. Mr. Most People was the, like, whenever you saw anybody on television being interviewed for anything or other, instead of setting up a dialogue, the chap who's, you know, working for the network would say, well, most people think that when you have a sit-in, you know, you shouldn't wear frilly panties and Wellington boots, or whatever you're doing, you know, rather than say, I personally think I'm a bit of a twit. It all seemed to be a way of avoiding saying anything, really, and creating this mythical most people, so as to put your subject ill at ease. Anyway, this is Mr. Most People's message to me. Everything is marketable. Souls are old hat. Besides, we've got them all in the bag. Ideas are objects, concepts are things, poets and even poetry. You invent it, we sell it. You become it, we project it. Your reaction to this bulletin has already been sold. Impressions are a speciality, provided they're as flimsy as the other clouds of shit with which we coat the people's minds. Leave them in peace. Let the people sleep. Then, that was followed by, that was actually during the campaign called I'm Backing Britain. I'm sure you all did your bit during that. Remember, everyone worked for at least, you know, 40 hours a week, overtime for nothing, just to help get their bosses back on their feet and whatnot. And everybody did something, you see. Some people waved flags. Mostly politicians and that ilk sent messages. This is called, it's a Queen's message, and it's called Put Britain on Its Back Week. And it's very short. Queen's message. What's the matter with ye? Give us a poke. You want nout but gobbles. I'm fucking choked. And then for my next epic. This was Mr. Most People's other message. I think I'll take up Morse code. And it's advice to young poets. Speak for itself, really. If your muse refuses to tickle your balls, fart in her face. If she says fuck yourself, take her advice and get on with it. The Arts Council is the home of contortionists. Well, that was all right, except I got a minute Arts Council grant about 6 weeks after I published that. But I was always keen on yoga, and I suppose that helped a bit. This poem is called The Devil's Destroying Angel Exploded. It has a couple of dialect words in it, which are pretty easy, like cad, which is cowled, or cold, as we say in the South. And the title, I brought me chorus, is from a pamphlet put out in the 19th century by, do you know John Martin, the visionary painter in that act? Cecil B. DeMille of the art world in the 19th century. Created all these great biblical canvases about 20 foot across, and they were beautiful actually, but he was from Northumberland, and he had a mad brother who was called Incendiary Martin, or Mad Martin, because he set fire to York Minster and did, like, you know, £10,000 worth of damage to it. And he was very pleased with that because he felt the clergy were sheep, leading sheep and all that kind of thing. He was a very religious man and he thought this was nothing to do with actual religion. But he was also a fascinating bloke, and he wrote a lot of political tracts as well. And he was put in the loony bin lots of times. And Martin, the painter, you know, he sort of invented safety lamps and things for miners and so on. So that, it refers anyway, it's about now in the part of England where I belong, or come from, where I belong there. But it refers to that time when the Northumberland Durham miners were forming unions, and it was illegal to strike, and when they did, they were like, most, a lot of people were deported and so on, or jailed. And at one point the jail was so full that the Bishop of Durham allowed his stables to be used. So there are two, I tell you that because there are, you know, that's a reference in the poem. The devil's destroying angel exploded. No sound but horns of southern ships and flapping wings. No colour but dancing black. Producers of heat confused in the cold moon full above the door. Sleep children of chilled night whose fathers were black men. The miner's bright eye is no slave. Sleep bairn, shiver now. Your father's gold is stolen. Strong fathers of a harsh past, despondent now, slag faces rot against the door. Your hands held hammers and demanded much. The moment passed and Ben's curled cad in the womb. Worried troops and churches you suffocated in the Durham Bishop's stables when Londonderry's jails were full. The coal you hewed should have burnt them alive. Instead, you begged another shilling. Beneath jagged brows and stooped backs, making others rich with the dust which killed you. You should have thrown it in their faces like a bomb, fed your children joyful stories of the blood of those who cheat us. Where we live, shattered smiles break on haggard faces. Manufacturers of filth marry our wealth in a confetti of votes. No breath of slum air. Counselor, elected by my father, he said you wore a worker's cap, called everybody Mara, but the word I heard was slave. Blood fluke in the brain of an ant, that gold chain scraped from the lungs of Pittman, your gown a union leader, gutted and reversed. Look, dozy fathers, look, your masters have changed. Drawn by the river mist, you drift in a dream. Our father, your flesh is overrun with lice, and all your life you nurtured many parasites. This is called Bunk, which is the, it's not a comment on the poem, it's a nickname of a pub on the Tyne, on the actual river itself. Lights from the industrial valley glitter like stars, and ship's horns have the mellow tone of an owl. Lap, lap, lap. Drunk and huddled together, lap, 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 at the river together. Warm folk say good night, drunk and huddled together, their voices part on the river. Soft hair, warm breath, my hands on your breasts, your dress and zips bare by the river together, lap, 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 huddled together. Now, this is the only literary poem that I ever wrote. It's called sticking a tail in Catullus. Which reminds me, I meant to reprimand you. I went into the bog there and I was very disappointed at the lack of graffiti on the walls.
The library,
thanks. Stinging a tail in Catullus. She won't let me have it away. Says she's too tired that I should practice celibacy like the ancients did. But we know they were notorious shit stabbers. You could squeeze more cum from two rocks, whereas I have enough to smash a beer glass and use my arse only for shitting and farting. One day I'll do it on her. What a revolting poem that is. Oh dear. I wish I'd read that before I came here. There's a longish poem I want to read to you, but I haven't read it just yet. And there's a bit of prose. How long have we been going on? About a quarter of an hour or something?
20 minutes.
And the part one. This is a kid's street song. Nora the Prossy's got pox, she lives in Pink Lane, never been the same since she opened her box to a pug named Tuck. Isn't it a long poem? Do you know Jeff Nuttall?
Mm-hmm.
Going in the world. As I was running up the down escalator, I passed Jeff Nuttall running down the up.
Give
me his money back.
Right.
Read a couple of earlier poems. Actually, I might sing when I've had that point. I wrote some songs. This is a love poem. The bodies are touching. What is the matter? Where is your mind now? What does it matter? Something is sleeping. Where the mind wanders, it wanders away. Let the mind stray. It gives back a pain. It sucks and is suction. The bodies are touching, touching. And this is called The Game Bird, which I wrote for my son when I lived in the country for a while. As I walked across the fells to Hangman's Hill, a family of partridge burst from my feet. The young half flew, half ran, their mother played lame. Returning the same family flap, but this time I chased the chick for the fun of it and caught her. As I stroked her head, she squeaked, and from the corner of my eye, I saw her mother lame again to tempt me. My hand open, she dived for the heather and vanished. I would have brought her home for you, but feared her death and your sorrow afterwards. Do you have Jerry Rothenberg here, I gather, last week? So doing his ethnopoetics. So I'll read you this ethnopoetic tract, which is a poem in Geordie dialect. The Geordies are a bit like the crows. called Shag. It has no footnotes. Can he board over there? Shut up, man, you're thinking old but tart. Divinado wouldn't mind a basher at all. Pet, can I take you? Yeah, I'm a big strong lad. I'll look after you. And now you're holding up the sucker, dummy. Who, lads, Tommy scored? What's your name, pet? How egg is it? Kiss, kiss a bit, field pet. Do you fancy a meat injection? Well, jump on the end of this. Suck me plums, cause it's suck off.
I come for a walk, Wiz. We're going out of the quarry and there's a shortcut. Leave us alone. Shut up or I'll belt you. Grab her. Give us a bit feel. Pull her down. Let's have a bit tit. How I am and I'm forced. I'm warning you, I'll get the copper. Shut up or I'll kick your teeth in. Pull her down. Rip her skirt off. Hurry up and stop with Thomas. Me next. Oh man, quick. Stick it in the get. How will I do? You want to keep still? Well, hit the twat. Please keep still. Bet I'm going to be a minute. Go on, man. Go on. Oh, that's nice. How well, it's me next.
Yeah. No, you haven't got a clap. I believe Jermaine Gray was. She wouldn't like that, would she? Actually, I read that in New York and they're most offended. These very intellectual ladies. No. Thought it was a slag and it wasn't really. Yeah. I'd just live outside. Oh yeah, I've got I'll read this poem called Gateshead, but I'll tell you where Gateshead is. There's a story that Gateshead, you know, is like the other side of Newcastle. There's a river and there's Gateshead, which is like the arse end of Newcastle, really. But and there's a story to illustrate it, a traditional story, which I was told by Bunting. About, he says, this bloke comes to town, you see, to Newcastle, and he says, excuse me, he says, could you tell me how to get to Gateshead? And this bloke says, where are you, Hinny? He says, you can do this road here. He says, you turn left, you can reach to the bottom, by the river, over the bridge, up a street, right over the hill, and you'll look around you and you'll say, by God, this could never be Gateshead, and that'll be Gateshead. That's a sort of middle class story. It's marvellous flyovers and things like that. This is called Gateshead. Sea monsters stride the alley, chalked on the asphalt floor as though it were a long cave. We sat on the top step, halfway up the pyramid to our back door, watched the sun swallowed in the dragon's flame, rows of roofs beneath us, chimneys like arms to measure it passing. Beneath the flapping clouds that women hang in zigzag lines, across the lane, mammal bodies swim. There are beasts with wings in the cellar, beaked and mucky faces contemplate each other. The children have built a toad run. We sit and watch the sun down. There is nothing else to do. I don't know whether you're in a serious or a humorous mood, actually. Very difficult to assess you lot tonight. It's a bit like self-service, you take what you're given. I've got these foul songs which I'll sing later on, I think. Like Persecution Complex, call me Percy for short. And Rent a Knob, an advertising jingle. They're all from the opera. Yes, that's what I'll do. I'll read you a scene from the opera. At the Opera House, Canario sung by Ennis. This is Act 39 or 2. It's really a one-act play for schizophrenic. Mary had a little lamb. What'd she do with it? She gave it to Leslie.
Who's Leslie?
I don't know. Who's Leslie?
I don't know. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Leslie.
Who's Leslie?
I don't know. Who's Leslie?
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Leslie.
Who's Leslie?
I don't know. Who is Leslie?
He's the one we're talking about.
Oh, why are we talking about Leslie?
Cause we don't know who he is.
Who?
Leslie.
Who's Leslie?
I don't know. Who's Leslie?
Leslie?
Yeah, Leslie.
Oh, I don't know.
What?
Who he is?
Who?
Leslie?
Who's he?
I don't know.
What are you talking about?
Leslie?
Who's he?
I don't know. Don't you know?
No.
Why not?
I don't know why I don't know. How do I know why I don't know? How don't I know why I don't know?
I don't know. Who's Leslie?
He's the one we're talking about.
Who?
We.
Who's we?
Was. Was is us, isn't it?
Who's was?
You know, Leslie.
Who is Leslie?
I don't know. Why don't I know?
I don't know why you don't know. Don't you know why you don't know?
No, I don't fucking know. I don't fucking know. Do I? If I fucking well knew why I didn't fucking know, I wouldn't fucking not know why I didn't fucking not know. Do I? You fucking idiot. What are you anyway? Fucking puff. Come on, fuck off before I fucking strangle you. Leslie be fucked.
Yeah? Someone called?
Get out, fuck off you get.
End of Act 1. Give you in a minute. Rodney Pump, it's Act 2. Rodney Pump had a great fondness for rub, a furious form of social activity.
Everything you want, whip trips, leather pleasure, rub fun, fledge fags, diabolical doodlings by well-dressed deviants, all the perversions you can save in one night, topped by ice cream pudding, raspberry flavour.
Know ye yourselves, as you shall be known, for it is unto thee that you shall forever come.
All the perversions you can muster in one night, topped by margarine pie, followed by margarine pie.
A pie in the sky is better than a smile in the air.
Bear brownies, bear and bayonets, all the fun of the female, left leg, middle toe and indispensable panties.
If they show signs of imagination, confiscate.
Never borrow a damaged brain.
Always refuse a dishcloth of dysentery. A bun in the oven is better than a platoon in the womb.
All right, girls, line up against the wall, tongues out, let them swash about. Oh, you ready, boys, on the other side, tongues out, when I drop the naughty naughty. I want you to start licking, and the one who gets the other side first gets a larger hearing aid.
An armpit of lice is better than an armistice on doomsday.
Make sure all fitments are well adjusted before straining.
Max, bronze dons, gas masks,
a wank in the Hoover is better than a steamroller.
I'm not altogether sure I approve of that.
Are you threatening me?
No, I use a tie myself.
Oh. I use a brick in me granny silk stocking. Does wonders for the psychosis.
That's the end of Act 2. Appear to be here for the epilogue. I didn't. Well, I'm going to read you some poems and then a longish poem. It looks long, but I mean I use short lines, so don't worry. These are poems which built up to that longish one. Entered a strange monastery, the order of chance, observing plants, how they grew, vision being nourishment, amply feeding shape, and turning leaves. Eye and restless head catches glimpse of twisting leaves, green flames, frozen. Watch it grow, stand years, stand cold. Does it move when I sleep or blink? Passing glances are enough, growing on the fragile stems of plants. And this is called New Body. As you saw my leopard's coat, I was a tiger. As you felt my bear's claw, I was a snake. As you stroked my cat's fur, I was a fish. As you built me a lion's cage, I was a worm. As you gripped mountains, I was a stream. As you crept tunnels, I was a sun. As you sought warmth, I was snow. As you expected thunder, I was calm. As you expected blood, I was stone. As you expected shape, I was air. As you looked, I was invisible. As you felt, I was near. When I appear, you tremble. And then the poem.
which is called Dancing Under Fire. And it covers, it's about a journey, where it covers, like, an there's an area in it, in this first bit anyway, about post-war, growing up in post-war atmosphere. And this horrible feeling of, this horrible feeling that there's something bubbling under the surface, very akin to fascism. But this is, I mean, that's only a slight touch in it, and the rest is like, I can't explain it. Love is just a pile of dust. A narrow bridge leads to a ruined castle protected by wolves. A miner carved in stone above his tomb, green and black only now. Taken from the Roman wall to build instead of defend. Some constructed towers, others used one slab at a time to represent themselves. A blue fish gave me your address, showed me uncharted land. Flowers obstructed us, butterflies clung to our eyes. Walls were dissolved one after the other, as we drew closer, quicker, owls of descent hovering only to preserve that space between us. Claws ripped off your lips, beak cooked out my eyes. You were a dream, as I approached, withdrew. Someone said the instructions were not meant to be read and understood. Blackbird flew to top of sun-tipped tree. All below became dark, he sang. How the master race longed to be enslaved in the bedroom and the slave secured in his dream. Hard, no wind ruffles the surface, nothing changes the step. Love, flesh and faith alone. Immovable eyes see my own stone stances, mother duck's huge belly hustles us into the nest, one fixed gaze burns into life. Drums beat a retreat to the stars. A sinking, flaming head quenched in the darkness throws light on the cycle, light, dark, light. Holes drilled into city concrete to fill with concrete, no crack uncovered, no gasp of green. The graveyard gives a splash of living colour. The instability of victory, thirst for a more terrifying defeat. What taxation and energy is required to maintain it? And how the people must beat their guns back into chains. She points out the attic window to a dragon coiled in the valley. Tells me street lamps mark the roads and the roads are old. I ask for words and her hair ignites, brings in the dragon. I ask for a lance, she shows me bracken to kindle its fire. Red and dancing are the flames, black and burning are her eyes. The soil we squeeze makes coal to give the fire the wings we need to fly. We shuffle through you, mother, to our deaths, took our claws to build a nest and whisper to each other. We've grown wings and fly together, leaving you the woven twig that shaped the egg. The dragon's flame, a local call to the sun. Once kept firmly beneath the turf, the whole male population went below the surface to revive you. Blistering hoar made us wolves, and I, like the rest, dance round, ancestor burning, out of their tombs, out of the stone, and into the air. Then, the rest of it. Tall lady in the dark corner, take off your hat. We're in possession of a dragon and he lights the room with fire. Wind blows through the window, flicks the tree, glittering of stars. Tonight, we travel the passageways and tunnels. All is dark and warm. Movement becomes peace. Curled in my stomach, burn with flames that give no light. Little black flame in my little black belly. Little black flame in your own black belly. I am the dark, do not look to me for light. The train rumbles in the valley, dream of dragons roaring in my belly. Look through eyes of darkness and discover darkness. The voice that speaks is clear, my own falters. Whose head is this, I know to a bone. Secure and sealed off in my womb, answer one word. Cannibal, cannibal, cannibal. What flesh there is yours. Cannibal, cannibal, cannibal. That hand you feel is yours. Those words are yours. The air you breathe is yours. The walls you touch are yours and impenetrable, shaped into a shell. Windows of darkness, walls of darkness. Your teeth cannot crack rock. Doors of darkness leading into darkness. The sleeping sun, a pea skin, your strength. The only nourishment, your swollen tongue. Eat that, stay alive another hour, but lose the power of speech. Dissolve, dissolve, reduce the cotton wool and still dissolve. Reduce the white sea foam and still dissolve. Dissolve to fishes in the sea and still dissolve. Dissolve to eggs beneath the leaf and still dissolve. Dissolve to fibers in the roots and still dissolve. Dissolve into a fish's eye and still dissolve. Dissolve into a seagull's beak and still dissolve. Dissolve into a seagull's crap and still dissolve. Dissolve into the salt upon the sea and still dissolve. Dissolve into a spot of blood and still dissolve. Dissolve into a kiss and still dissolve. Dissolve into a tongue and still dissolve. Dissolve into a lick and still dissolve. Dissolve into a mirror's eye and still dissolve. Dissolve into your own desire and still dissolve. Dissolve into a warmest fur and still dissolve. Dissolve into the air and still dissolve. Dissolve into a breast of milk and still dissolve. Dissolve into your sucking lips and still dissolve. The milk burns in your throat. The flame is yours. You are the flame. There is no name. You are the name. The river's voice is many flames. It's followed by a short bit of prose. Always shook, always trembled, always walked. Martyr from Westerhope, we called him Martyr, and he always shook. They said he was shell-shocked, no one knew him. He always turned up, sometimes twice or three times a day. No day was complete without Martyr. We thought he was a spy or wanker. Wore a slouch hat and raincoat in all weather. If you gone to Kenton Woods, Martyr'll get ya. Martyr'll get ya. The more we discovered of the world outside, there was Martyr. He was no joke. Silence when he passed. Great stories followed him. Hero, raper. All the time his fingers trembled, his eyes blinked. Pulling the hat over his face. Watch out for Martyr. Got red hair and walks all day. The large world must seem small to Martyr. A hush round the lamppost when he passed into the next lamp's light. Who? He has Martyr looker. Tall and thin, speaks to no one. A ghost from another age with bombs and trenches, mustard gas and Martyr, steel helmets and Martyr, bayonets and Martyr, medals and Martyr. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, Martyr'll get ya on his knee. 4, 5, 6. 4, 5, 6, Martyr'll take down your nicks. 7, 8, 9, 7, 8, 9, Martyr's name is Frankenstein. Tot from the shop said a bomb exploded in his trench. Comes in every day for his woodies and matches. He has no words, only demands and memories of old commands. Martyr's got a blade in his mac. Martyr wears an old gas mask. Martyr got a shock in the war. Martyr, he can't fuck anymore. Martyr's got no cock in his pants. Left it on the shores of France. He wasn't anybody's husband, not that we knew. He lived somewhere else, no one knew. Motherless Martyr, left her with his enemies and memories in the trench. Similar to Himmler, only he'd never been in the Albert Hall. And his balls were only used as anchors for his cock to stop it floating off like a zeppelin every time it sniffed fresh air. Martyr, oh Martyr, your lack of words makes us suppose so much. Do you get your dull on Fridays? And then three short poems to finish the long poem. A train replaces the dragon, roars in the valley, engine shunt, a voice from someone's telly. Will you watch me on the box, my lips move, my eyes are dots, my tune an electrical cackle. Wired magic in a wooden box, I am a coffin with a window. You can watch, see me flicker, if you touch I will shock. It's not electric interference that makes me present shadows of the real event. I am rich, I am greedy, pay the rent, and I will give you anything I invent. The train that went everywhere. My hands to her breasts, tore away the cloth as her foot touched my leg, ran across the field, scattering birds, smelt the damp grass, blood to a gallop. Peewits flashed their white bellies, my fingertips exploded at her tits. A rabbit dashed to the stream, girl white and worsley perched on the stream, cocked its eye at the fish. Her nipple filled my mouth, implored me to relax, whisper silver fishes in her ear. One touch could crumble. Edward Monk's soul stirs in her womb. With no glib intent, lay my head on her belly. She licks my ear. We love a little. Trains. There are no eyes like my own. And only words work with vision. Father, you built the lines I travel on. My direction was laid by your sweat and death. Glitter magpie, take my soul and squeeze it, set your beak and tear it out. Eyes of joy dispel the mist, the hawk in the railway yard, I saw it snatch a prey. Peck a hole in the sky, let the magpie through, boats sail cities on secret canals, and murky creatures lurk of railway siding. What is chosen remains.
What's happening, isn't it? Should I just cross?
Yes. Be nice, yeah.
If you want to light up and smoke a few out.
Claude, now that full of it.
What is this?
Just hold it.
Oh, that's a tip. Yeah. Are you leaving it on?
Just leave it on.
What do you want?
Okay.
Right? Yeah. Back. I'm going to finish the reading with a piece of prose from a book called Guttersnipe, which is coming out in with City Lights sometime, supposedly December, but I'll believe that when I see it. It's Santa Christmas. You want anybody? This is about signing on the doll. I mean, like, I don't know what to say, but it says all it says for itself, really. I'm just trying to fill time till he comes back from the bazaar. Well, anyway, this is about an area. I'll tell you what, before I read that, I'll read that. Sounds like a pentangle to me. Upstairs. Oh no, it's not so fair. This is, it's something, one, it's called Warmth, and I just can't, I think the publisher put that in for a title, because I can't remember calling it that, but maybe I did. One pissing day, I go into the nab wearing a pair of holy sand shoes, getting my feet wet, sit next to a damp block without a coat. You don't know what the nab is, don't you? It's now called the SS, Social Security, as opposed to National Citizens. They're very imaginative, these government officials. So anyway, I'll start again. One pissing day, I go into the nab wearing a pair of holy sand shoes, getting my feet wet. Sit next to a damp bloke without a coat. I wouldn't put the dog out in this weather. I wouldn't put the dog in here. A bearded old Irishman staggers past and bursts into a room marked private. A few minutes later, he bolts out backwards.
The bastards! Some bastards at the Salvation Army's been in here using me name, the bastards! I'm not even staying there! Can I see the man now, the bloody bastards?
A few of us chuckle. A Nabman's voice shouts from the cubicle, "You can get the cruelty, man, I don't care. You're getting no money." A sad old man crawls out. Next, I go in and give my name and address and tell him I want some money. I'm on the sick, you see, but I can't get benefit. You know, not enough stamps signed. Okay, take a seat. A middle-aged, battered-looking bloke sits next to me, obviously dossing. Been here long, since 3, what's the time now? 4, working? No, I'm on the sick. We're all sick. Are you working? No, no, I refuse to. I said, I'm not working. They said, you're not what? I said, I'll work if you get us a ship. Merchant, is it? Aye. Took away me passport or I'd still be there. What for? Dunno. Never did outrun. Just took it. I hope they pay me rent. Didn't last time and I slept in a power station. How was that like? Well, I climbed up and found this warm spot on top. A little hut for the inspectors. You see, where the heat rises. Warm as out it was. What happened? I got found snoring by a copper. He says, what you doing there? I said, sleeping. He says, have you nowhere to go? I said, aye, but the assistants won't pay the rent. He took me to the station and I saw the sergeant and all them and they gave me a letter from the chief constable. The chief, eh? Aye. And I came down here and showed them. Yeah, should have heard them. There was no need to go to them. So I got it like. Married, are you? Aye, one Ben. Are you? Aye, well, pissed off, you know. Have you pissed off? No, no. They all piss off, you know. I've gone to sea, save up, marry a queer fella, have backward children, and no dependents. A loud voice from the cubicle shouts, Pickard! A tall, fair-haired looking gent is waiting for me. When did he last claim? Last week. How much did he get? Oh, £9. It says £9.18 here. There's a difference, isn't there? Well, I dare say. Yes, on the sick, are you? What's the matter like? The whole room was earwigging. I'm seeing a specialist at the psychiatric department. The psychiatric department? How long do you expect that caper to last? You'll have to ask me doctor that. Okay, take a seat, will you? I do next to the landlocked sailor. I could do with a piss. Aye, but you'll miss your turn if you can. I wait another hour and a half before the hatches open, and they call me again. It's a meeting behind the private door with a smiler. He offers me a seat and calls me Mr. Pickard. I almost feel ashamed for being there. Mr. Pickard? He has all manner of glossy teeth with words in them about a marvellous place called a rehabilitation centre. Really, it's a wonderful opportunity to get back into the habit of working. But I do work very hard, man, on my poetry. Yes, of course, I appreciate that. But the reality of the situation is that they don't. And so, to please them and do yourself a really good turn, why not make arrangements to move in next week? We'll continue to pay your wife, I mean a cohabitor, and you'll get £1 a week pocket money. You have to be in each night before 11, but can stay out all night on Saturdays. Up every morning at 6, make your bed, have breakfast, make an early start in the work. His face was blissful as he described it, and it sounded lovely. I mean, he said it so well. What work? Oh, that's not for me to say. You'll be examined by the camp, sorry, centre doctor, who will then recommend you to the centre manager. What work you're best suited to, you see? You mean I'll be able to write poetry? That's great. I need discipline. Make me work twice as hard. I'll be able to finish that novel I started. How long will I be there for? Only 6 weeks. I'm afraid you won't be able to write poetry. The doctor's very good and he'll decide what work you're best suited to after an examination. I don't fancy that kind of an examination. I'm not going. Look, Tom, it's only 6 weeks and we give you a free pair of boots and a boiler suit when you finish the course. Well, I don't need boots and a boiler suit to write poetry with. Anyway, there's a guaranteed job at the end of it. No, but it takes them off your back. Who are they? You know. No. Well, you will if you don't take this offer. Look, it's all written in this pamphlet. He flashes one of the most glossy, colourful government publications I've ever seen, just like a holiday camp advert, and it really looked fun. Let's have a look. I'll take it home and think about it. He snatches it back to his side of the table, obviously fed up, and says, listen, Pickard, if you don't go, and you have to make your mind up now, I'll have to let them see you, and woe betide you then.
I'm a poet, I need time, not training. I'm not a fucking soldier. If you don't go, there's always the alternative of the re-establishment centre. Well, what's that? It's where we send you, out in the moors for 6 months. It's the same type of course, but concentrates on giving you a healthy body and a healthy outlook. It re-establishes you. Well, you can fuck that, I'm not going there either. We can't force you, but if you refuse, we'll prosecute. And the usual sentence is 6 months. So what's the difference? What's the difference? The re-establishment centre is voluntary. But how could you prosecute me? Failing to maintain your family. I do maintain them. I get £9.18 a week for them. It's not much, I know, but that's all you buggers give me. That's not maintaining them. We don't starve. We've got a roof. Look, you better go and take a seat, Pickard. Which I do next to a bloke who is in the process of falling off his. Is that what you do with the money we pay you? Wasting on beer? A woman kneeling beside him said back to the infuriated voice, "You haven't given him anything yet. He's been here long before opening time. He's not drunk. He's fainted." Two half-human-looking nab blokes come out and carry him into a room marked auxiliary. It was in faint letters, which I suppose dated back to the time when the nab hut was an army hut. As they stumbled through the door with him, I noticed a lot of old rusty bikes piled up against each other. Half an hour after the incident, the bloke never reappeared. I was called again and ushered through another private room past dozens of clerks milling through filing cabinets, putting one piece of paper into one drawer and another one coming and putting it into another. Along a narrow passageway to the foot of some extremely steep stairs. What's up there? That's the manager's office, with the NAB Central Advisory Committee waiting in it. Sure enough, a gigantic man appeared at the top of the stairs, glowering down at me. Send him up! I was pushed up the stairs into a large room. Immediately to my right, a small clerk was bent over a piece of paper making frantic notes even before anything was said. He also seemed very nervous. The others were a bunch of assorted local respectability. Magistrate, leader of industry, personnel officer in industry, and a councillor, the manager spoke. Now don't start in here with us about your bloody poetry, Lark. It won't wash, and nor do you by the look of you. We're not here to soft pedal, so straight to the point. If everybody came here and signed on as a poet, we'd be bogged down with idlers, layabouts, and good-for-nothings. I know it's only an excuse to idle because I've read your record. Well, who wrote it? Bloody nonsense like that won't wash with me. So before we start, poetry's down the drain. We've got a lot of questions to ask you. Under the Geneva Convention, I'm only at liberty to give me name, address, and national insurance number. You won't be at liberty much longer with that kind of back chat. Remember, I'm a magistrate. Who's that bloke taking notes? He's nobody. He's mine. He's never mind. We're asking questions. I'd like to know who all these people are. The manager began to turn purple, but the personnel manager intervened and put down his pipe. I think there's no harm in introducing ourselves to the laddo. I'm Mr. Ursha. This is Mr. Johnson. This is Mr. Thank you very much. I'll make a note of that. I began to write their names down. Now. I think you're taking it a bit too far, laddo. Well, you've got my name. Yes, but you're what? Well, you know. No, what? A flaming impotent layabout. You can't write, you're only half literate, we haven't even GCUO levels. Your poetry consists of emotional distress signals, illiterate name droppings, improper spellings of proper nouns, and intellectual cloudbursts. You've been seen to piss on floors in pubs which you're never out of except at closing time. You spend the time between opening hours picking crab lice from your pubic hair and getting into debt. You steal and smoke dope tabs, have intercourse with anyone who's willing to open their legs for you. When you do get poetry readings, you become so pissed you fall off stage and sometimes have to be thrown off because of your irreverent behaviour toward the audience, most of whom come from respectable homes and expect an evening of genteel culture. Instead of getting drunk and going to cinemas, they spend their evenings and money on poetry and ballet and opera. England's culture palaces are small because we don't want the rabble to come in. We don't want crudities because it will flatter the rabble, who after all have little money, no intelligence and no manners. These people will fart instead of applause, and the only clap they'll give you is the clap. The one who is asleep in the corner wakes up. Who is this bastard? Another pretends to take my side. Now, Albert, take it easy. He's human, you know, you big brute. Then another. Why aren't you looking for work? You could work in my buses, serving my public. We need louts like you with big mouths. You're in demand because you demand nothing in a loud mouth. If you'd only ask for money quietly instead of calling yourself a poet, Now they all come to us saying they're poets and painters, all the lazy, rotten layabouts like you, all those unwashed, lazy bastards with no education and a minute sprinkle of brains which should have been bashed out of them. God knows how they escaped. They all say that they're better poets than you, and why should we favour you? No, no, you must take a job, or we'll prosecute you. I don't want a job, man. I've got enough work to do. What about your family? Have you no shame? You're morally and legally obliged to feed and shelter them, and any failure to do so will result in prosecution by us. I don't neglect them. I get money off you lot for them. My father worked all his life, except when he was sick or unemployed. He paid his stamps. The national insurance pays the rent and some of the food, clothing we get as gifts. Anyway, you've not yet been able to offer me a job which pays more or even the same as the national assistance money. So why should I make my family exist on less? I may as well be a poet on the dole. We have no category for poets. You must sign on as God intended you to, as a labourer. All right, I'm sick of poetry anyway. Do you have any work in a lighthouse? I really fancy that. Looking at the sea all day, listening to the waves, swimming and watching seabirds, feeling the wind up the spiral staircase, scraping ships off the rocks, wearing woolly jerseys and Wellington boots. No, no, no. But my buses need bright young lads to man them, and think of the interest in it. Clicking tickets, doing sums with real money. It needs a lad with your talent, prepared to face a challenge. It's a good life. The sexy, well-placed ticket machine, clickety-click. All that money clinking in your leather sporran and the tea breaks. Those sensual, bawdy 10-minute refreshment courses, and course is the word, with lingering passengers dying to press your bell. Think of the power. And find out what's between your slices of white bread. Those cheeky conductresses running your fingers through their threepenny bits and knickers. It's a man's life on the buses, right up your street. And at the terminus of every week, you get a free pass and a wage that's fit for any man who's not too fussy about how much he earns. I like to walk. Couldn't you give me a job in the Forestry Commission amongst those gigantic woods with a stone-built house, air my children could breathe? We don't run a bloody travel agency. You're 20 and already act like a senile idiot. Now think of the fumes of my factory. They're foul at first and may have killed your father. But when you think long enough, he breathed wealth. He breathed the fumes of capital. He had gold in his lungs. He was fortunate to be the carrier of such a healthy disease. Money is dirty. Very dirty when you touch it. It's already been handled by many grubby hands. Your father's bronchial phlegm coats pennies with brown slime. Paper money is covered with germs. People who work with money quite often get skin diseases. But it's a disease of wealth, of life itself. It's the fruit and seeds of a miserable plant which gave its entire life to the growth of wealth. Your father's miserable frame coughed, choked, and ached its way to the grave, but not before he spewed a seed or two. Those seeds sank into mother energy, mother capital, mother drudgery. Your father's worm-eaten flesh is now purer than it has ever been. Work, son, is the only expression in the working man is allowed. All of every man's fuel is needed for the fire. I am the stoker. I snatch children into my arms and teach them the meaning of fear. I instill pain, galvanize terror, manufacture respect, create duty and weld it to drudgery. Industry is love. Industry is life. Work, son, is the only word in the language I trust. All others are convoluted with meanings to confuse the ignorant man. The steamer takes over and tries to put it more gently. After all, work gets you there in the morning and back for your supper at night. Work is what gets you your wages. I shrug my shoulders. The bloated bag of shit from the corner woke up and said, I sometimes wonder why we fought the Nazis. It's those workshop bastards they should have exterminated. Those slimy bastards we call our children should have been thrown into gas ovens. Those Nazis are all right. They're a hard-working lot. Nose always to the grindstone. They know the meaning of work. It's in their blood. And we spilt it. We're the guilty ones. I fought the last war for you, you know. Which side were you on? I don't think he even realized I was there. He continued. We sold our hands spilling the blood of those hard-working Nazis. It's us who should be afraid. They're only getting rid of a few parasites. All those Nazi workers just obeying orders.
We should look up to them for an example. If they're only slightly mistaken, we should be ashamed. It's our children they should have exterminated.
He's weeping with guilt, crawling about on the floor, hands clasped together.
Please forgive me, Gort. I didn't know what I was doing when I chopped that Nezzy's head off. Forgive me, Adolf. God was on your side until our leaders got us involved in the war, and then he had to protect his own. Adolf, Adolf, I've got your cock bottled in a jar in the pantry. Why don't you kill those long-haired lazy bastards? I bet those filthy bastards are bastards. Their parents saw it wasn't worthwhile getting married when the kids turned out bastards.
He's a weeping heap on the floor. And the steamer intervenes, steps over him with an obvious erection and puts his hand on my knee. Don't be so brutal, Albert, you big hairy hammer. You make the boy cry. He's sensitive, you know, not like you with your muscular brain. He blows me a kiss. He's really got a very muscular brain, which gives him lots and lots of trouble. He's got no idea of how sensitive a boy is. In fact, he's got about as much idea as a fanny and a jockstrap when it comes to handling boys. No appreciation how subtle the person's humanity is. He thinks he can hammer his way into anything and enjoy the full fruits. Only the other night I came home and caught him in me nighty and silky panties. He ripped them off, laddering me nylons in the process. He was so rough. And then the steaming idiot put them on himself and expected me to get the erotic tremors. Well, did you? All down me seamless and into me high heels I did, pissed, laughing at the threadbare idiot standing in his holy sweaty socks and pimply hairy chest. I mean, you'd be much better off at that sort of thing. And there is the opportunity because I've just heard of a vacancy in the Naughty Nighty factory.
What?
Oh yes, you could try them on when everyone else had gone. Nighties, silky panties, ooh, you could wear them and think of all the juicy cunts that'd be slithering into them when you'd finished. Lots and lots of them dribbling into the delicate material after you've been sniffing them and rubbing them on your wedding tackle.
He was drooling at the mouth.
Do you get some wages as well, like?
He looked quite hurt. Don't be sarky, pet. I feel well. I mean well. But look, if you really fancied it, I could fit you in at me rubber hosepipe club. Factory. I have a very select staff, but we could do with someone who knows how to pack things in really tight without too much concern for the consequences. You know, someone who could care for all those miles and miles and miles of rubber fittings as though they were his own. I mean, I'm sure if you stuck in and kept it up, it could come to some sort of mutual satisfaction.